It's our Friday newscap, and here are some voices from this week's news.
The state was in a tremendous shortfall. I mean, Arizona was hurt more than other states in the country through the recession. We made the difficult decisions in the first year.
There's a lot of momentum, a lot of support for things that are related to education, including higher education. I think that the universities have demonstrated a new way of operating, so it's much more efficient, much more effective. And so I think it's time for new thinking and new investments built around that model.
We can create a program where detainees are more actively involved and responsible for the care and compassion of the animal population that we care for.
So often I think that people still think of Arizona and they think of cactus and sunshine and golf courses and retirement. And, you know, we always try to tell them what they don't know about Phoenix. And moving into the top five really puts us in an elite group.
And joining us for the Friday newscap are Jennifer Doakes, founder of JDD Specialty. She was also a longtime member of the Arizona Republic editorial board. And John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com. He's also a contributor to a number of newspapers around the country. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks.
So earlier on the show, we were talking about former Corporation Commission Chairman Gary Pierce. He was indicted by a federal grand jury. And it just, like, the thing that struck me was, like, the Arizona Corporation Commission just, yikes. Like, yeah. This seems like an agency that just can't stay out of the bad news.
Yeah, this is, well, I would like to say it's a shock, but you read it and you nod your head and go, yeah, that sounds about right. This is Arizona. So it's very concerning, though, because it really is an indictment in a way, in a general sense, of much of the culture at the state capitol. So you see a lot of the players, a lot of big players. There are some unnamed people being thrown around now, and now it's a big whodunit trying to figure out who's involved with this. But I think everybody in the state, especially the voters, need to look at the Corporation Commission and see what's wrong. It's obviously something broken with the system that just repeatedly, from Susan Bitter Smith to just all these people getting into the same problems again and again. And over what's shocking to me is what small amounts of money these people
it was
are
like
trying
30,
to get
$31,000.
Right, to toss away your career. And you're like, really? That's just a car. It's, you got to think bigger, I guess. But hey.
Jennifer, were you surprised when you read this at all?
No. I mean.
And that says something, doesn't it?
Right.
It does. I wasn't surprised because, you know, George Johnson has been in the news for decades for questionable things. And
he's the owner of the utility,
right,
of Johnson Utility.
Right. And as John says, you know, the Corporation Commission has been in a continual spin of scandal. And I think Arizonans deserve a lot better than that, obviously. And scandal and regulators is not something that you really want in the same sentence. And I'm sure this is all going to bring back calls for appointing members instead of electing them.
You guys mentioned the co-conspirator that was talked about here, right? This unnamed person who was not indicted in the case. I wonder, it seems like this might have been somebody who turned it all over, right? Who made a deal. Are there a lot of rumors going around about this right now?
I know that just knowing the Capitol, I think there's a lot of rumors going on. I don't think a lot of work is getting done around there. So I haven't heard any personally, but check Twitter over the weekend and look for buzzes of this. But again, Corporation Commission exists for the citizens of Arizona. It's basically consumer protection. And to see this kind of self-dealing and sweetheart deals and crony capitalism that's going on, and it has just continued to go on for years and years. It really, as Jennifer said, we have to look at appointing these members because something is obviously broken very fundamentally with this structure.
And the unindicted co-conspirator, I mean, that is the big mystery. People are going to be on it, and and it's going to be a really good second-day story.
So, Jennifer, one of the other people who was indicted is a lobbyist named Jim Norton. He works at a firm called Axiom. And this is a firm that has very close ties to Governor Doug Ducey.
Right.
And Jim Norton is somebody who has known the governor for a long time. Does his indictment in any way affect the governor, do you think?
No, not directly, I think. It does affect Jim Norton, who has a reputation as a prominent lobbyist, and I think there will be some disappointment about his connection to this. It's a loose connection in my view. I don't think that it touches the governor at all.
So I want to go from one former elected official who's having legal trouble to another. And yesterday, the Arizona Supreme Court basically sided with former Attorney General Tom Horn on a procedural issue. It did not, we should point out, rule on the merits of the case of whether he and a former aide violated campaign finance law by essentially colluding with each other. John, was this – like what difference does this make really?
It gives maybe half a day or half a news cycle of good news for Tom Horn, who is sorely in need of good news.
It's been a while,
several years,
right?
A very long while. But it – I think the main thing to me is it just reminds me why he was tossed out in the primary for Mark Brnovich. Just people had been hearing stories about him and various problematic issues. And campaign finance is a big one for the attorney general of a state to be involved in. So this gives him a little bit of hope, but I don't see how it changes his ultimate legal status.
Right. And there still is a separate probe going on into Horn's actions filed by this former employee who said basically that he was using the AG's office as campaign headquarters. So that's still all happening. What I wonder and I think is really interesting about this is that this is like another former official who was elected at one point but is no longer in office, who is still kind of hitting headlines like a Joe Arpaio, who's still going to be on trial and going through these cases. So do you think that kind of backs the public pressure off once they're not in office anymore? Or do you think people care anymore?
I think people do care. I know I do as a taxpayer, and you want to see these people just held accountable for what mm-hmm. they've done. It actually takes a lot of pressure off the current politicians who are at least we don't hear anything about yet, let's say. but you're like, wow, I'm glad we're rid of them and have this new crew in whatever they're doing. So in Arizona, it's kind of hard for the news to cover a lot of the policy or for readers to pay attention to the policy because of all these juicy scandals that always seem to pop up month after month.
Jennifer, this case is supposed to go back to the Attorney General's office, right. Mark Brnovich's office. But, you know, Brnovich is somebody who ran against Tom Horn, mm-hmm. beat him in a primary. Could we be in a situation like we were before where the Attorney General's office has to recuse itself and send it off to another prosecutor, which is sort of how we got into the situation in the first place?
I think isn't the process that he's going to send it to, is it the, it's another...
Another agency.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be another prosecutor because that didn't obviously work this time around. This Tom Horn to me is that story. It's like another bad penny thing. It just keeps coming back, and I think it's important to mention that this wasn't a complete victory, as his attorney said. It's a chance for him to have due process, and we all want that for him. But I'm anxious for this story to go away so we can get to the other Tom Horn story that's coming up.
Right, and essentially what the high court said was that it's essentially, and I'm obviously paraphrasing here, it's inappropriate for one person to make the first finding and then the last finding, especially right. when a judge in the middle made different findings that were rejected. So, yeah, it does seem kind of to be a due process situation, and maybe this has some precedent for future cases going forward.
Or in getting the law right. I mean, she was, Sheila Polk said that she was following the statutes on the book. Maybe we need to take a look at fixing that part of it that governs this kind of mess.
We are done with the legislative session and have been for some time. This week, though, Governor Ducey acted on the last handful of bills that he had to either sign or veto. John, any of them that he acted on that you were surprised by with what he did?
I think a lot of these were kind of inside baseball. One is just the university bonding program. Freeing up at least more money for higher education in Arizona has been a priority for most people in the state, whether Republican or Democrat. But he did wait a considerable amount of time to actually sign
till
this
the last
bill.
Day. Right, yeah. And right, something he's been day. Pushing for.
Exactly. So it's something that he has been promoting, building up Arizona's state in universities, especially those with national appeal, trying to get more funding to them. But it is odd that there was so long of a wait between there.
Jennifer, any surprises?
Well, I was surprised that he vetoed the student...
Student journalism bill?
Yeah, the Senate Bill 1384, I mean, giving students First Amendment protections. That to me, was legislation that seemed to be produced in the right way. You had bipartisan support. The students and their sponsors of the bill were all working to fix things that people thought were broken. And I thought the governor's veto message was a little weak. I mean, he didn't give a very good explanation as to why he vetoed this.
Well, as you've worked in a newsroom before, right. So I mean, I'm curious. I'm interested. I'm glad you brought that up because mm-hmm. he basically said, we're not sure that students this age can essentially be trusted with all of these rights and protections. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that as somebody who worked on an editorial board. I'm not surprised at your reaction.
Yeah, it's a little bit, don't do this because I said so. And it's not fair to the students. There are high school students, college students are very bright people who have opinions and can find things and can find information. There was a story in Kansas where the student newspaper questioned the credentials of a principal, and lo and behold, they were fake. And so these kids know what they're doing, and they have guidance. And I just think it's unfortunate that the unintended consequences thing was left out there without a full explanation of what that meant.
That's Jennifer Doakes, founder of JDD Specialties, also a longtime member of the Arizona Republic editorial board, also joined in studio by John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com. We'll be back with more of the Friday newscap here on the show in just a moment. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5 and KJZZ.org. With Lauren Gilger, I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. We are in the midst of our Friday newscap, joined by Jennifer Doakes and John Gabriel. Guys, at the top of the hour, we heard a clip from Sheriff Paul Penzone, Maricopa County Sheriff, talking about what would happen at the site of what will soon be the former Tent City. The crew started tearing it down this week. And I'm curious if, from your perspective, the removal of Tent City, is it a good policy decision? Is it more of a symbolic kind of thing? What do you think?
I think it's both. I mean, it needed to go. It has been more about a marketing scheme than about criminal justice, and it just needed to go. It served no good purpose anymore.
John, what do you think?
Well, it was originally erected for overcrowding reasons, and I can understand wanting to do something to help with overcrowding that isn't a problem anymore in Maricopa County. So I think it's good, and I think it's good that it's being done publicly. I think
The teardown.
I think Sheriff Penzone should be jumping in front of cameras and showing it being ripped down like our former sheriff used to do, walking around harassing prisoners one by one as he walked around Tent City to show how tough he was. So I think it's very important for Maricopa County to get rid of this and all the stories of pink underwear and green bologna and all this ridiculous things that were going on, and bring a professionalism to it. And using that site perhaps for helping out animals, to help prisoners gain skills, not only compassion, but how to care once they are out of that facility, I think is fantastic. It's kind of a turning point of showing the way forward for current prisoners instead of just punishment.
There's been so much talk in the time since Sheriff Penzone took office about trying to sort of erase the legacy of Joe Arpaio, even things as simple as, scraping the sheriff's name off the seals on the jails and things like that. This seems like one of the bigger ways of doing that. This was one of Arpaio's sort of signature policies here.
And if you travel around the country and anybody talks about Maricopa County, they're like, oh, that's Arpaio's. He's the guy with mm-hmm. the tents. So it really is a huge public symbol. And it just shows, again, I think just bringing professionalism to it. And when you're dealing with prisoners in there, instead of focusing on punishment and let's hurt these people and let's do it in a public way, focusing on, okay, how do we make sure you don't repeat? How do you make sure you have a good step forward? And taking care of animals, actually, if you look around the country, a lot of criminal justice reform people have pointed to programs taking care of animals, how it's a great way to make a living once you're out of prison.
And the other thing that, the other thing that I heard that he got rid of, the sheriff's department got rid of, was the howitzer former sheriff enjoyed riding in the parades. And I think that was a symbol, too, that needed to be gone. I mean, it was about militarization of the local law enforcement. And that's not the message that I think we want people to know.
When you're talking about a break from a prior administration, especially in something like law enforcement, how much of it is the visuals of a sheriff riding around a howitzer or, prisoners in tents? And how much of it is the actual what's going on in jails that the outside public generally doesn't have that much of a view of?
I don't know. I mean, what was shown in the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office was not the type of criminal justice system I think that we want. The majority wanted. He obviously tapped into an idea of really punishing, humiliating prisoners. And I don't think that's what we want to do. And so I think it's time to move on.
So something else in the news this week, Phoenix, back in the top five as far as population. We are the fifth most populous city in the country. John, to you, what is the significance of that?
I really think, again, just for national exposure, people are surprised. When people think of Arizona, you know, I'll be on the East Coast sometimes and I'll casually mention how I walk down wooden sidewalks to unhitch my horse. And about half the audience nods seriously and goes, oh, that's fascinating.
As a tumbleweed rolls down the
tumbleweeds,
street,
right? Tumbleweeds, yeah. And they're shocked that I'm not wearing boots and a big hat. So I think it is surprising for people. And as far as Governor Ducey is always looking to attract new businesses, it really gives an indication that how many businesses have already chosen to move to Arizona, and opens vistas for new ones to move in. We aren't just retirement communities and resorts and the Amblin Cowboys downtown. It's we have a lot to offer here in education and in industry.
Hey, Jennifer, economic development folks seem really, really excited about this.
It's nice. I mean, top five. That's a very nice thing to be able to brag about. But I think the mayor said correctly, you know, we're still trying to figure out what we want to be when we grow up. And there are opportunities right now to shape that growth. And I think the focus on the having an innovation economy is a good one. It's going to position Phoenix to do well. But I think it's more than just bragging rights for Phoenix. It's bragging rights for the entire region. Everybody ought to be happy about this.
And like you said, this is a really interesting moment for Phoenix, especially in downtown Phoenix, because so much of the attention from the mayor, from the governor even, has been focused on building this center city. And it sort of collides nicely with this moment when all of a sudden we beat Philadelphia again, we're in the top five. Do you think that this will do more to sort of spur the downtown Phoenix rah-rah-rah cheers that are going on?
I think it definitely will. You look at so many cities trying to capture, excuse my annoying marketing term, mind space with various up-and-coming companies and startups and so forth, and it really shows that we're a player. And when people who haven't been to Phoenix for a while come to downtown Phoenix, they're amazed. I've had dinner with a lot of people who have moved elsewhere, and they come back to visit. And they're walking around downtown like, what is this place? Mm-hmm. I know my family moved here when I was a little kid in the 70s, and downtown was a ghost town. It was a concrete ghost town. You'd see, you'd go there on the school bus, and you'd get the heck out as soon as possible, and nobody was there after 5 p.m. So to see the transformation is amazing, and every time I go downtown, it might only be a couple of months between visits, and I'm stunned at what's changed already.
But again, the transformation didn't happen overnight. It started 20 years ago or longer.
Sure.
And I think what's being planned now is going to position Phoenix to be top five, not just in population, but in other things. And you want those top five measures in quality of life. And I think it's coming.
For a city that has for so long been so reliant on population mm-hmm. growth, is this maybe more significant for Phoenix than it might be for other cities?
I think so. Phoenix has traditionally been structured. It's basically a real estate economy, and let's sell more land and get more people in. So I think it does say a lot. But I think one good thing for laters, not only in Phoenix but throughout Arizona, are really focusing on quality as well. And building that kind of an urban core that a lot of people can cross-pollinate. So you'll have technical people, you'll have, you know, communications professionals, you'll have students mixing together, sharing ideas. And one thing that is, they're definitely looking forward and pushing the quality instead of just this big, massive, I've always joked Phoenix, the entire greater Phoenix area is like one gigantic suburb, you know, is kind of the feel you get from it. Driving out, especially in the far west or far east valley, you just kind of see the same red-tiled roofs. But they're really working on making downtown Phoenix distinctive. I also like that they aren't focusing on, let's just build one big arena and downtown will be revived. They're working on a lot of little hubs of innovation.
Yeah, and I think we're finally comfortable with the idea that density is a good thing and growing up is a good thing. And so I think that we're going to see a real big dynamic downtown here very soon.
Well, and it's interesting, along those lines, I spoke with a writer in Philadelphia yesterday about this. You know, Phoenix knocked Philly out of the top five. And his point was basically, yeah, that's great, but Phoenix is basically cheating because it just keeps annexing land. So, yeah, of course, you're going to have more people. And whereas Philadelphia, you know, there's much less, you're kind of constrained there. You have rivers and other towns and cities right there. So I'm wondering, you know, is there a sense, Jennifer, you mentioned density, especially in the downtown urban core, but Phoenix land-wise is immense relative to a lot of other cities. So I guess, is it maybe diffused a little bit that we have all these people?
I don't know about diffused. I mean, it's we need more people in the central core. That would be nice. And people living, working, playing, doing all the things there. And I think there's a possibility of duplicating density in other parts of Phoenix that would help quite a bit. But I think that the guy's right. We did sprawl. and that wasn't necessarily a good thing. And growth probably didn't pay for itself as we were told it was going to do. So we do need to fix the core, and everybody should be happy about the core of downtown Phoenix.
John, what do you think?
I think all is fair in love and demographics, and Philadelphia, they're a bunch of sore losers, and bring it on, pal.
Just watch out. Just watch out. They don't throw batteries at you.
Exactly. Yeah, don't mess with the Eagles fans. I love you, Eagles fans. Don't hurt me. One of the reasons Phoenix has grown in population and size is just we don't have this claustrophobic East Coast, been around forever kind of feel. Mm-hmm. We definitely added a lot of area, but that's one reason companies move out here. They don't need to build a huge high-rise in a vast downtown area. They can build a campus a little further out and build a campus so they can build a lot more products and just stretch their arms a little bit.
And I should say, I have family in Philadelphia. I love Philadelphia. So no offense to any Philadelphians out there.
And you like the
cheesesteaks. I do love the cheesesteaks in the water. I said it's true. That's John Gabriel. He's editor-in-chief of the website Ricochet.com, also a contributor to a number of newspapers across the country. Jennifer Doakes is founder of JDD Specialties, a longtime member of the Arizona Republic editorial board. Thanks to you both for coming in.
Thanks for having me.